everybody.
Hi.
You want to say hi, Marshall?
Yeah. Hi.
Okay, that's good. Welcome to All Have Another. I'm your host, Lindsay, and I'm so happy you're here today. If you're new to the show, welcome. And if you're returning, welcome back. I really appreciate you all being here. This is a show where I bring on motivating and inspiring women. We talk about the serious things in life, but we also have fun, casual chit-chat as well. And my hope is that you feel like you are just part of the conversation, hanging out with your friends. You heard a little voice at the beginning of this intro. That is my son, Marshall. I started dreaming of this podcast last summer, and I'm a full-time stay-at-home mom, so a lot of times when I'm recording intros or when I'm editing interviews, I have little people at my feet. So that's what that was. This is real life, and real life has been really tiring today, let me just tell you that. Today you're listening to episode 22, and we're talking to my friend Abby Bales. Abby is a mother, a wife, and she's a physical therapist in New York City. Abby's been through a lot in the past few years, and she talks about some pretty major surgeries she's had, and then we get into some fun stuff as well. So I really hope you enjoy my conversation with Abby. I know I felt like I was talking to somebody I've known forever, and I've known Abby online. I know, right? All these people I just know online. I've known her online for quite a few years, but this was the first time I actually talked to her and heard her voice, and I loved it, and we'll definitely have her back. So if you guys like the show, if you're loving it, head over to iTunes or wherever you listen, and I would love it if you would rate and review, and then share this with one of your friends. If everybody that listens, if everybody that downloads this episode shares it with somebody, that would be so awesome. Follow me on Instagram, LindsayHine626, and you can find me on Twitter, at LindsayHine. I also have a Facebook page. It's called Out for a Run because that's my coaching page, but I post all my podcast stuff there as well.
No.
What am I forgetting, Marshall?
Hi.
I'm forgetting to say hi. I think the only other thing I'm forgetting is if you do want to subscribe and get updates, I started a newsletter. If you go to LindsayHine.com on the right-hand side of my blog page, you can sign up for my newsletter. Just put your email in there and we'll get you on the list. Okay, thanks so much for listening, and here's Abby.
Congratulations on your third baby.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited. I'm 26.
It's a boy, right?
Another boy. A third boy.
So you're doing, beginning of October?
October 20th.
Nice. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I feel really good. Like, you know, I don't know how your pregnancy was, but my first trimesters, like most normal people, are always awful. And then usually, you know, weeks like 16 through 32 or something, I feel great. So I'm right in the middle of that.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're feeling good. I'm a total freak. I had pretty much the most uneventful pregnancy regarding all of that stuff, except for I had a bowel obstruction because of my previous surgery. So I was in the emergency room for that reason. But it's really nice when you're pregnant and in the emergency room because they send you to the labor and delivery floor and they put you in isolation.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so you're in, like, the private room, and it's great. And I had, like, 12 different specialties checking up on me. It was like, the most leisurely emergency room experience ever.
Now, how far along were you when that happened?
34 weeks. So if they had to deliver me, they could have. But okay. And if they had to operate on my intestines, they could have, even without delivering him. But that call was made by my longtime GI, who's absolutely incredible, and I used to go to Cornell, and he's the chief of medicine at NYU, so it's like awesome.
So how long were you in the hospital for then?
I was in the hospital for about 36 hours.
Okay. Wow, so that's crazy. What, did you deliver full term?
I did. So it was a planned C-section because of my previous surgeries. They didn't want to risk tearing. Mm-hmm. So past a grade three or grade four tear, that means that they would have had to go back in and redo my J-pouch surgery, and I would have had to have, like, major surgery again, mm-hmm. Like intestinal surgery. And they didn't want to risk that. And, you know, I was high-risk pregnancy, but only for me, not for the baby. So, but I did end up going, like, I went full term. I had, like, an uneventful cesarean delivery. It was great. And, yeah, it was, like, the least painful of all my abdominal surgeries.
Well, yeah, the nice thing about having a scheduled C-section is it's, like, you're not going through, like, 36 hours of labor and trauma beforehand.
Yes. Totally. And you're not like, I had girlfriends who hadn't eaten in like 3 days and
Yes.
forget about it. Absolutely not. No.
Yeah, Marshall, my first, was a scheduled C-section, and yeah, it was nerve-wracking because at the time I had never had surgery before, let alone surgery where you're like lying there wide awake.
Yeah.
But looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, that was like the most routine thing ever. And the doctors were talking about like their trip to Brown County over the weekend once they were sewing me up, and everything was just,
Totally.
you know.
Yeah, I was like, I went and got a blowout the night before and like walked, I basically like walked in and was like, hi, I'm having a baby in about an hour.
And I look good.
And I look good. Let's be clear. Let's be clear. Before all surgeries, I always tell women, I'm like, listen, before you go in to have any sort of surgery, get a blowout because you're not going to want to wash your hair for a couple of days and get your nails done.
Yeah, I was gonna say, go get a pedicure for sure.
Yep. 100%.
So, Abby, we've been following each other on social media for a few years, probably, right? 3 years, maybe?
Yeah. Well, while like Mark, how was Marshall?
Marshall's four. I had to think
Yeah,
about
so
that.
at least 3 years
Okay.
before Big Lou came around.
Before
Big
Big
Lou is my
Lou,
spirit animal.
isn't he
I
great?
love him.
I like Marshall. I don't know how, I never know how to say this because, you know, you don't want to talk badly about your child and you love your child so much, but he is a difficult child, and I needed Big Lou. Let's just say that.
He's a challenge. Marshall's your challenge.
He
And
is.
yeah, and Big Lou is your Big Lou's just like your buddy.
He is like, well, the other day, I don't know if you follow my husband on Twitter, but
I mean, of course I do.
okay. Usually, a lot of times when someone follows him, they follow me or vice versa, and we, you know, we're ridiculous. But he tweeted the other day that he had never met anybody like Marshall, and it was on a really hard day. Like Sundays are always end up being by the end of the day really hard at our house. I was like, you've never met anybody like him? Well, you're married to that person. You chose me for life.
Hi,
I
right
mean,
here.
yep. So anyway, yeah, so yeah, Big Lou is just, oh, he is just a breath of fresh air, and I don't know what this third baby's going to be like, but we'll see. So, okay, let's talk about you though, because we shouldn't start this podcast talking about me. Let's give everybody an intro to Abby.
I am a physical therapist in New York City. I am a mom of 1 2-year-old awesome little buddy. I am married to a Marine who has out of the Marines. I am one of 5 children from an Irish Catholic family. I grew up mostly in Chicago and Colorado, but I have East Coast roots and I've lived in New York City for I think 15 years now, 14 or 15 years now. I love being a physical therapist. I love my job. I am really excited to change how people think about physical therapy, how women are treated in the medical field, and how our female patients are treated. So it's really inspiring. I really enjoy it. I'm a marathon runner. I've been a runner for 26 years. And that's really my sanity. Running is just a part of me. Like people are like, oh, I need inspiration to run. I need a person to come with me. I need a song or whatever. And running's just, it is what it is for me. It just is a huge part of my life. I was a cross-country runner, track runner, way before it was cool. So I have all like the memories of wearing like terrible sports bras that chafed because they were made of pure cotton and Umbro shorts because they didn't
Umbros.
chafe. And so I have deep-rooted backgrounds in all things nerdy, including a love of science, but being pretty terrible at it, and a love of running, and also not being the most amazing runner in the world. But it's really kind of it's all come together in my later on in life career path. I was previously I have a degree in musical theater from the University of Northern Colorado, and I came to New York with that in mind and ended up in a completely different path than I thought I was going to go, and I love it. It's great.
So, how old were you when you went to physical therapy, school for physical therapy?
Well, your science credits from college, science and math credits, they are only good for 10 years. So when I started going back, I decided to go back when my husband, who was then my boyfriend, he went on a deployment to Iraq, and I thought, well, this is a good time for me to go back to school. I think I was 20 26. 25 or 26, and my girlfriend was going to PT school, and she and I would always have these really in-depth conversations about movement and injuries and things like that. And she went back to school. She applied. She went back to school rather quickly, but I didn't have the credits to do it. So I started a post-baccalaureate pre-med program at NYU when I was 29.
Okay.
And previously from that, I was doing some prerequisites like psychology and other things at Hunter. But I got, it's a program there. I got accepted to that program when I was 29, right before I got married. And then I started that spring. And that was 3 years. And then after that, it was 3 more years of doctorate school.
So you finished at 36?
35.
Okay. Isn't that so interesting? Because you feel like when you're in college as like a 20-year-old, like the thought of going back to school or finishing, you know, that at 35 just seems so old. And it's not.
It does. No. Well, it's crazy to me to think that our 17 or 18-year-old selves or even our 22-year-old selves decide what we're going to do for the next 60 years of our careers or 50 years of our careers. That looking back seems absolutely batshit crazy. Oh, can I swear?
Yeah, you can. Totally.
So sorry about that. Don't be sorry.
No, people do it all the time on this show.
You know what? Ashley was on this show. I know that you can swear.
We talked about swearing in front of our kids.
I love that girl. absolutely. It seems crazy to think that myself at that age could possibly know what I wanted to do with my life.
Isn't that so hard though? Because it's scary to think about, but it's like, you know, I don't know how else to say this, but like for middle class America or whatever, what do you do when you graduate high school? You go to college.
Yeah. Yeah.
And looking back, I know for sure I was not ready for college for the academic load that it was. Like it just, for me personally, I wasn't ready for it. But what else was I going to do? I would have been totally left out from all my friends and depressed, like doing who knows what if I didn't go, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I wish it was more encouraged in our society to take a gap year and do an internship.
Yes.
So that you could intern at two or three places where you thought you had interest and see if you had interest after seeing the day-to-day stuff. Because being a doctor sounds really sexy and being a lawyer sounds really sexy. And, you know, oh, I'm going to be a actor. And mm-hmm. Oh my God, the things that people do in their daily lives have very, very little to do with what they see on television or what their expectation of those careers are. And I wish it was more accepted that we take a gap year, you do 3 or 4 internships and then decide if what you were interested in was what you actually wanted to study or if there was something else that lit your fire that you wanted to go after.
That's a really good idea. And you could maybe live at home while you did that too, because obviously you don't have any money still, right?
Totally. No, yeah, absolutely. Really, I mean, they're usually unpaid.
Yeah, of course. I love that. Let's implement that. How do we get that started?
Actually, do you want to know something funny? Is that I was just listening to the NPR news report when I was running, and there is a program that's trying to be started that would pay each American $10,000 a year, so that I don't know if it would replace unemployment, but they said it would prevent people from taking lower paying jobs just because that was what was available, as opposed to holding out or going to school for more education or for waiting for a better job to come around that was more suited to them or that paid them more. And then they talked all about how to do this, and it was really interesting. And I was like, oh, maybe we could do that for students, you know? I mean, you never know what's gonna happen with the election.
Right.
Seems like Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are talking quite a bit on how to make college more affordable and all that kind of thing. And I'm not quite sure if that's viable, but it sounds like a good idea.
Sounds like a good idea. Figuring out how to make it happen. I have no idea.
It's not my area.
No, physical therapy.
Yeah.
So then how many years have you been practicing?
Oh, just once. So this is my very first year. So I'm a brand new physical therapist, but what makes me a little bit unique is that I was a personal trainer for 13 years before I was a physical therapist. And I have had my hands on bodies long before my classmates have. So that kind of gave me a leg up on the hands-on experience. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I switched careers because I started to notice that there were other people who got more joy out of the day-to-day grind as an actor than I did. And they really loved it. And they were really good at it. They were really, really good at looking at music and just hearing it in their head. And they could play it on the piano so easily. And I had to work so hard for it. And I, even in the end, I didn't love every experience I was having. And I was like, am I better at something else? And then I realized that my whole life I had been kind of, yeah, doing acting, but also like sneaking out to, like, I taught group fitness classes even when I was in college, and I would go and work out, and I would go on runs, and I would run 5Ks. And even though my academic career was meant to be in musical theater, I always was finding ways to like sneak out back into the fitness world and learn more. And I realized that it was because I was really interested in it, even though it wasn't something I felt that I was gifted at. Like, I wasn't great at biology and chemistry and physics, but I knew how the body worked, and I could see. I can watch people run. I could take a snapshot of people running and be like, wow, whoa, that must be hurting there. And people would say, how do you know that? And I would say, well, because if you do it like this and like this and like this, see, you feel that there. So it was something I was interested in, and I was always like geared toward it. So I definitely found myself always gravitating back toward that, and which is why when I was older, I didn't feel like I was giving up anything to change careers. I felt like I was actually finding my footing in it. So I'm a person that looks at physical therapy like some people look at math or music and say, no, I just get it. I just understand that. The biomechanics of it, I just get it. So
did you, like you said, you weren't necessarily good at science. Did you struggle through those classes in school then?
Yeah, 100%. So I actually, when I was in high school, I got demoted from the regular chemistry class into like dum-dum chemistry class. But it was because of the math of it. Like, the math never made sense. It. People who are good at math are often good at music, and I'm good at neither.
Yeah.
So I'm good at memorizing music. I can hear it in my head, and I can regurgitate it. I have good pitch, but I couldn't just look at it and make sense of it. And it was the same thing with math. And when I took biology, chemistry, physics, pre-calculus, calculus at NYU, I had a tutor for every class. Every single class I had a tutor, and my husband supported me with that, and we made it happen so that I was working with somebody one-on-one to try and get through those classes. And, you know, I had like a 3.0 average basically by the skin of my teeth and just with a lot of hard work, not because it was something I was good at, but I was great at anatomy, great at it.
That my makes cadaver sense. Labs,
every time I get into a cadaver lab, there'd be people who would like not want to touch the bodies, and I don't like touching dead fish. So I don't like going fishing and taking the fish out of the water, but I've had the very, very large privilege of being able to take two cadaver classes, and I have loved every single one of them. And I will move cadavers and move bones, and I will dissect till my heart's content. So I was great at those classes.
So I took anatomy in undergrad because my degree is in dietetics, and I failed it.
No.
I had to retake it. I only retook it once. But I took organic chemistry 3 times.
Get out.
Because I couldn't. I think part of this goes back to what I was saying about, like, I wasn't ready for college. Like, emotionally, I wasn't ready for everything that I needed to do. I wanted to, like, be social and not think about studying so much. And unlike my husband, I'm the kind of student that, like you were saying, you got tutors, you know, you did what you had to do to get it done. Like, I needed to focus, and I wasn't willing to do that. But yeah, I took organic chemistry 3 times.
You know, organic chemistry is one of those classes that no one ever, and I didn't have to take organic chemistry as a prerequisite. That was the one class in pre-med that physical therapy track does not have to take. And I think my lucky stars, every single day I didn't have to take it, because the smartest people I know who are now doctors, the smartest people I know felt like they were failing the entire time. And I just don't know if I could have done that mind game where it's on that curve and they don't tell you until the end if you pass. I'm pretty sure I would have probably become homicidal at some point.
Yeah. And yeah, it was like I can't even remember everything that we did. I mean, it was like, I don't know what I would have done if I didn't pass it the third time. And I had met my husband by that point in my life, and he was probably thinking, oh my gosh, this girl is nuts. But yeah, anyway, so I totally can relate to that. And I mean, it even goes back to like, So I failed anatomy, and I didn't fail organic chemistry, but you had to have a C to get through. So, you know, I had a D basically failing. But same with, like, finite. I remember after I failed anatomy, I was terrified to take finite. And I was like, I'm going to fail this too. And I did it in a short summer class. And I literally went to office hours every single day. And I worked my butt off, and I got like a B plus in the class, which is like to this date one of my most, like, I am most proud about that in my college career, getting a B plus in finite.
Absolutely. I mean, I still hold really, really high those Bs and those passing grades. And some of those classes, like you said, I did the same thing where I took them over the summer. I took physics over the summer, which I don't know what possessed me to do that. No, sorry, not physics, calculus over the summer. And I'm so bad at math, but my professor was this very lovely Italian man. And he, like you, I was in his office every single day. I think he actually, like, begged for the department to pass me in the end.
I don't want this girl in my office anymore.
Well, what he said to me was, he said, well, what are you going to be when you, what's this for? And I said, for physical therapy. He said, you don't need calculus for physical therapy. I said, I know, but they're making me take physics. He's like, you don't even need it for the physics that you're taking. I said, I know. And he said, oh, I'm going to talk to them. And I just, you know, let it slide. And oh, there goes my C plus in physics, or in calculus. Yay me.
But you had to take it, right? Like, I mean, it was required. Yeah.
It's a requirement. So I didn't have a math credit from college, from my first undergraduate. So I had to take pre-calculus before I could take calculus. So I took two math classes in my post-baccalaureate pre-med program. I took pre-calculus, calculus, and I had to take calculus before I could take physics. And then that fall, spring, I took physics. And that was actually when I got really sick. So that was I had an incident with a professor who refused to give me the exam early. I needed to have my surgery, and he refused to give it to me early. And I think he figured out too late that was against the American with Disabilities Act.
Yeah.
Because I put in a letter to the department head about it. But I ended up just taking it when everyone else took it, and I had to move my surgery to a different date and have my mom fly in into a different time. So
that's insane. So let's talk about all that. When did you find out you had, you know, ulcerative colitis or any of that?
So I didn't start having symptoms until I was 29.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's actually fairly common for autoimmune diseases for women. Ulcerative colitis is an inflammatory bowel disease with Crohn's disease. And a lot of women who have things like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, they don't start showing their symptoms until their 30s. So I was right on track for that and really normal.
Okay.
I did not know that I had a family history of it on both sides of my family. No one talks about bowel diseases. So for any readers who are squeamish, I'm sure that I'm going to say something that sounds, or readers, listeners who are squeamish, I'm sure I'm going to say something that sounds gross to you. So I apologize in advance. It's not a sexy disease at all. So I had symptoms of constipation and bleeding, and my grandmother, before I was born, she died of colon cancer. And so that I really ran to the GI, any GI, just to get checked out. And they were all like, nah, it's hemorrhoids. It's, you know, nothing big. I'm sure you just need to change your diet. But at that time I was marathon training. So my diet was really, really good. I had, like, switched over to eating more complex carbohydrates and more fiber. And I was basically the healthiest I had ever been, except for this bleeding. And so I really insisted on getting a colonoscopy done. And while I was waking up from the anesthesia, this doctor was explaining to me that I had this disease. He was like, you just have a little bit of mild colitis, you know, ulcerative colitis. It's no big deal. I'm going to give you some steroids and you move on. And I went home in kind of a daze. And then I looked up what it was because I had never heard of it. And I never saw that GI again because I didn't like him. And I thought that was a terrible way to tell somebody that they had this autoimmune disease. And yeah. I started researching for specialist in my area, and I ended up with Brian Bosworth at Weill Cornell Center, Jill Roberts Center for Inflammatory Bowel Disease, and went forward from there. So that was the beginning of ulcerative colitis for me.
Were you terrified? Like, before you got your colonoscopy, like, were you scared?
I thought I had colon cancer.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, this is really going to be a drag for my family. And I just got married. So it was about 6 months after I got married, and it was right before my 30th birthday. And my family history is scary with cancer. My mom has had breast cancer twice. My father has multiple sclerosis, and he has had B-cell lymphoma, and my sister has stage four breast cancer when she was 35. So there was a lot of cancer in my family, and I was like, oh man, it's cancer. I'm going to come out. And but when he said ulcerative colitis, I thought, oh, is this just like a IBS? But it wasn't. And then as I started to learn more about it, the people at Cornell were great at explaining to me. I mean, Brian, my doctor, who's still my doctor, he would draw me pictures and he would explain it to me. And as I was going through my histology and immunology classes in school, I was learning as I was sick, I was learning about my own disease. But then I had my first real flare up and I got really scared. That was really scary. And then I started going on some pretty heavy drugs and that was really scary.
Were you kind of like not relieved that you had an autoimmune disease, but did you have a little bit of a sense of relief, like, oh good, it's not what I thought it was at first?
At first, I did, yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely, just because I didn't know. And you know, when I was reading the statistics, it was like 75% of the people live with colitis. 90% of the people are treated with drugs and are symptom-free most of the time. Women are fine having babies; they actually usually go in remission. All these wonderful statistics, except that over the 2-year span between being diagnosed and having surgery, I fell into all of the smaller percentage of people who didn't respond to drugs, of people who did have to have a total colectomy, of people who I wasn't, they wouldn't have suggested that I try to get pregnant in the condition that I was in because I was so sick.
So your first surgery was what? When was that?
2012.
And what was that surgery?
So it was a total colectomy, where they removed my entire colon.
Okay.
I had 8 centimeters, I think, of active colitis in my colon, and because I didn't respond to any medications, the keeping part of my colon in there would have kept me at risk for the disease again, just spreading and getting a lot worse. So I had a total colectomy, which means that they cut you in the same way that they do a C-section cut, and they remove your colon. Then they take, and it's part of the other part of the surgery is preparing for the reconnection. So I was fortunate enough to be healthy enough and the rest of my bowels to be in good condition to use my small bowel to create a little pouch at the bottom of my rectum in order for that to become a new reservoir for stool.
Okay.
So they created that and let that heal. And in the meantime, I was given a colostomy bag for 5 months.
Okay, I was wondering about that because I knew you had a bag, but I didn't know what the process was there.
So the colostomy bag serves as a way for the body to heal from the surgery, and they have
Okay.
to make sure that there's no infection in the new pouch that they've created because the pouch is created with small intestine, so healthy intestine,
Okay.
and it's attached at the rectum, but it all has to heal. So they'll usually do what they call a takedown surgery, which means that they'll take the part of the small intestine that's sticking out of your body where the stool is removed is called a stoma. They usually bring it back in and reattach it within 4 to 6 weeks, maybe, or sorry, not 4 to 6 weeks, within like 3 months. But I was starting doctorate school, so I needed to be in class that summer. I couldn't go back and have surgery. I had surgery 4 weeks before school started. My doctorate program started. So right after I finished physics, I had 4 weeks off and I did my surgery. I think I finished my exam on a Tuesday and had the surgery on like a Thursday or something. And then I had 4 weeks to heal. And with my colostomy bag, I started my doctorate program with 43 strangers in a room and me and my colostomy bag.
So do you have it like in a way that like you wore a baggy shirt, or like how did you do that?
Yeah, I wore baggy shirts. Colostomy bags are actually fairly easy to hide as long as they're not gassy or full, which, you know, you deal with that throughout the day.
You just change do you I mean do you just when you go to the bathroom, you empty it out or whatever?
Yep, so it has a bottom part that folds up, and you just empty it out, as you're sitting on the toilet. And there are little drops that you can put in that make it smell less, so it's not as obvious when you're clearing out your bag. But you don't smell while you're sitting there. That's like a common misconception. There's no odor from the bag at all. And they make some bags that release gas over time so that it doesn't blow up because our intestines are constantly getting rid of gas. And probably the only thing that anyone might have noticed if they got close enough to me and it was quiet enough and they sat next to me long enough is that they would hear these like little gurgling sounds that your stomach makes. It would come out of my stoma as like a little stoma fart. And so I told in the beginning of school, I told my seatmate, who is actually one of my very, very dear friends, and now she is, but she was a complete stranger, and I just told her, just in case anything happens, I have this thing, I have here's my doctor's name. If something happens, wheel me on over to him. And then I, everybody else I kept it a secret from for a couple months.
So then you, okay, so you had that for 5 months. And then you were cleared with everything looking good, infection free, that you got rid of it.
Yeah, so I was healthy. I was happy with my stoma. I was really happy. I named her Rosebud. I talked about her a lot on social media. I was really very vocal and visual about having a colostomy bag. And for the first time in almost 3 years, I wasn't sick because I was anemic. My bowels were dying. I couldn't eat. I couldn't. I mean, I ran 2 marathons while I was flaring, but I ran them mostly out of just pure stubbornness to not let a disease stop me from running it. But I was not healthy. I was tired all the time. I had the flu all the time. I would catch every cold that anyone ever was near me within 10 feet of me. And being in a at NYU, our classes were like 500 people in an auditorium for chemistry every day. So I was always sick. I always had a fever. I always had the chills. I was always in the bathroom. So when I had Rosebud and I didn't have a colon anymore, I was healthy for the first time. And I felt amazing and I was running. And when they were discussing the takedown surgery, I actually wanted to hold off on it for another 6 weeks because that was when Christmas break would be, but I was having blockages because I have scar tissue around my stoma. So I had two intestinal blockages that put me in the emergency room. They're very, very painful, and there's no way to get rid of them except for me to do the takedown surgery so that they could move it out of that space because it was scarring over because it was there too long. So then in October, right before Hurricane Sandy, I had the takedown surgery, and that was actually kind of a worse. Not a worse recovery, but it was more mentally, it was very difficult because the small intestine tissue is not meant to do the job of the large intestine tissue. One is nutrient absorbent and one is water absorbent and storage. And so the small intestine tissue that was became my J pouch took a long, long, long time to adjust. And it's great now, but back then it felt like I was taking a step backwards in the second after the second surgery. So that was mentally very difficult. And I went back to school 10 days later.
Oh gosh. So, I mean, I don't know how else to ask this. Do you go to the bathroom like normal?
Yes. Yeah,
Okay.
and you should feel free to ask me anything gross or inappropriate because I am the girl who talks about that stuff. You should hear the conversations that I have with runners when I'm running or whatever, because everyone's like, "Oh, I had that problem too." I was like, "Yeah, like I needed to walk around when I was sick. I would walk around with an extra pair of pants and an extra pair of underpants because I could not get from A to B without losing control of my bowels." But
Ugh.
yeah, so I don't have a bag anymore. I go to bathroom like normal. I just go a little bit more frequently than the average
Okay.
Joe, and all of my skin and my tissue has now adjusted. And the only thing that I have occasionally is a bout of pouchitis, which is just inflammation of the pouch, which means that I go to the bathroom more frequently. But one round of antibiotics and I'm back to being normal, and I can run, and I had a very successful pregnancy. And yeah, so I'm the success story. I'm very lucky. I have the best doctors. I live in New York City, where I had massive options for doctors. I have a husband who was incredibly supportive, and really, it didn't make him squeamish or want to run away, which is good on him. Maybe, other men or partners wouldn't have been as supportive. But even while I was sick, I was going to school, and he was still, Yeah, we'll get you a tutor. We'll get you whatever you need. What do you, you know, we'll make it happen. So, and I have a great family who has been through a lot more than what I've been through. So it's beneficial that I had all of those things in place.
And think about if you hadn't like been proactive. I mean, you could have just taken what that first doctor said and been like, "Oh, well, this is my life. This is what I have."
And that terrifies me. So the internet is a scary place, but sometimes it's a place of empowerment if you can find a little bit of information and find a specialty. Whenever anybody contacts me through my blog or elsewhere about having ulcerative colitis, my first question is who are you being treated by? And often it's a gastroenterologist, and sometimes it's a general gastroenterologist. And I always recommend that if there's a specialty place nearby that you, or you know, an hour away, you try to connect with them because, you know, I was part of a drug trial. Where I was, I had that opportunity because of the center, not because I was seeing a GI, but because I was at a center for inflammatory bowel disease. They do drug trials there. So I had access to everything. I had doctors who speak at symposiums. You know, my doctor went from being the associate professor and director of Cornell's Inflammatory Bowel Center, where he's very highly regarded. He's now the chief of medicine at NYU. Like, he is no schlep. So when I found him, he was just an absolute gold mine. And I really encourage people to seek that out because, you know, I might have just been, he might have, somebody might have just put me on steroids for 6 years and said, you know, good luck.
Right, yeah.
And the osteoporosis that goes along with steroids and the things that it does to your heart, like, you just don't need that nonsense. And I actually had a girl from high school reach out to me and tell me that she was really glad that I was talking about it because she had lost her mother to complications from too much steroid use,
Oh, gosh.
due to ulcerative colitis. And so I always kept that very, very close to me and made sure that I was an advocate for people seeking out more information.
Well, and you're right too. The internet is scary. Like I'm kind of like I have a little bit of health paranoia that I am working on every day. It's kind of just like a fear thing that I always have dealt with. And I do not Google anything because I will convince myself it is the worst possible thing it could possibly be. But with what you're saying, it's like, if you're someone like me who that's maybe not good for you to do, having an advocate, like so a friend like you, or a mom, or a husband, or you know, someone who else can maybe like jump in and help you do that research so that you're not so scared, I think that's really important too.
I agree. I mean, I met Tina Hopper, who's the blogger over at Carrots and Cake, largely because we both have ulcerative colitis, and we've been able to, you know, go back and forth a little bit on it. And you know, it's great to reach out to the community because you can find people who are having similar experiences that you are, and really connect with them. And sometimes that's a way of asking about, hey, so my friend was doing, you know, she had 6-MP as her drug. What do you think about that? Or, you know, what do you think about me taking biologics? Did you have a successful pregnancy? I talked to a woman in Australia. We Skyped in Australia. She was in Australia and I was here, and she was talking, we were
Wow.
talking about getting pregnant because she wanted to get pregnant post-colectomy. And I was pregnant at the time, and I stood up and I showed her my belly and I was like, here's what happens post-colectomy. You know, I'm successful. So I love being able to connect with other people. And there is a program that I'm a part of. It's called One to One, and it provides patients anonymous. You can call in, they call in and they ask you whether or not you're able to take the call. Days in advance, it's all set up. The patients talk to each other. So we don't give our names. It's like a call-in center, and then we're connected with each other at a certain day and time. And they're allowed to ask, I mean, I give them free rein to ask me anything if they have a concern about something. So it's great if you can find those resources, I think, and talk to other people about it because not everything out there is right. So if you're guided by someone who has a little bit of information, you know, a friend who's like a doctor or a relative who's been through it, it's really helpful.
Yeah, I agree. So your husband was in the Marines. He's not active anymore.
He's not. He was in the Marines. He was in the Marine Reservist for 11 years.
Okay. So he was deployed quite a bit when you were in school.
So when he did his reserve years, which is a 6-year commitment, he stayed in for a couple of years after in the inactive ready reserve, I think. But when he decided, he was in the inactive ready reserve when we met, and he decided he wanted to go back to do another tour in Iraq. He had already done a tour in the first wave that went over. I know you and Michelle talked a little bit about that. So my husband was like, he is in the infantry, so that means that he is like a soldier in a tank in town. So he would go out in the first wave, and they were in Baghdad, they were in Fallujah. It was less volatile in the first wave. And when he came back, he was finishing school, he was working a little bit, and then he decided for various reasons that he wanted to go back and do one more tour. And he was actually planning on going to the Navy SEALs after that because he was really fired up. And so when we were dating, after I think we were dating for like a year or a year and a half or so, he re-enlisted as coming off the IRR and went back to Camp Pendleton, and then he re-upped and went to with a unit from Ohio to Iraq for a year.
Oh wow. Now when was that last one?
That was 2007.
Okay.
Yeah, no, sorry, 2006 to 2007. So he was gone for a full year.
Oh wow. And you guys were, what year did you get married?
2009.
Okay. So what does he do now?
He works in finance now.
Oh, just like my husband.
Yeah, he
Except for my
had a
husband
little
has not been to Iraq.
he had a circuitous journey getting back into the world of working over here, and he's been very fortunate that he has had he had no experience, and he's just a really quick learner. He's so smart, and so now he works in finance in New York City. So
And your son is two.
my son is two.
So what is your everyday life look like, the three of you?
So at any given day, we're up around 5. Sometimes my husband is up a little bit earlier. I'll either go for a run, like I'll either have dropped my clothes at work the night before, my clothes and my makeup at the work the night before, and I'll run to work, or we'll get up together and everybody will get ready. My son usually wakes up between 5:30 and 6,
Okay.
so he's always been an early
Early
riser.
riser, yeah.
But it works for us, and maybe that's how it happened anyway. But he goes to bed between 5:30 and 6,
Oh,
so
nice.
6:30 at the really latest. So we're up, and my husband showers, I shower, we get Henry ready, we have breakfast, and our nanny comes between 6:20 and 6:30. Justin and I commute to work together. He drops me off, then he goes to work. I'm at work by about 6:45. My first patient comes in at 7. Some mornings I do start at 6:30 if I'm trying to accommodate, especially runners are really all about the early appointments, so sometimes I'll come in early at 6:30. If I run, I run in Central Park, do a couple of, dilly-dally loops around different things, do a workout, and then I run to work and I shower at work and then get ready for my first patient at 7. And I work from 7 to 4. And at 4, I get home as quickly as possible to squeeze my little boy, and we make dinner, and we play, and we have a dance party, and then his daddy comes home, and we do our night-night song, and I put him to bed, and then have dinner or go work out or go run if I haven't already that day. My husband will stay home and chill out and stay with the sleeping babe, and then come home and try and relax. And if I'm studying for something, I put in some hours studying. And usually we're in bed by 10 o'clock.
So 10, you sleep 10 to 5 pretty much. 10 to
Yeah, I
6.
mean sometimes earlier if it's like a late night or I have curly hair, so sometimes there's a situation where I need to like wash my hair at night, and then I have to take the time to diffuse it and dry it, and that's an hour long process. So sometimes instead of working out, I actually have to like wash my hair. It's an actual real thing. It's like, well, that 50s thing of, oh, I can't go out, I'm washing my hair, and like there's sometimes I'm like, I can't go
Real
run, I
life.
gotta wash my hair.
Yeah, I will never understand that problem because I have just like really straight, fine hair that dries in like 3 minutes.
Oh, I mean, I love having curly hair,
Yeah,
but
you have
it is high
nice,
maintenance.
big, pretty, beautiful hair.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I have to work really hard to make my hair look anything that's not just like flat on my head.
Yeah, I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, right?
Right.
Because yours dries so quickly and you just like run in and
It's
out of the
super easy.
shower.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely
Yeah.
doesn't happen.
I can get in the shower, wash my hair, dry it, have everything ready. Like if I'm in a hurry, I can do that all in like 25 minutes.
That must be amazing as a mom, though, to be able to do.
Yeah, it is. And I don't even get me started. I'm like my showers most days include both of my kids in the shower with me.
Yes.
Which we're really lucky. We have this ridiculously big shower. Like it's probably it's too big, honestly. And it has two shower heads, so it's like very wasteful, but I just let them get in with me, and then I usually get in and out within like 4 or 5 minutes and let them, like, you know, play in the shower for another 5 minutes while I'm changing and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's so funny. I always see these little memes on Instagram and stuff about, like, you know, there's always an audience, plus one audience for bathroom time, and
Well, and I have to say, though, I just had this conversation with some friends who have a little girl. Well, they have two little girls. And the dad was saying, like, no, absolutely not. Do I not shower with my daughter, who's three? And I was thinking, gosh, I guess that is different for dads with little girls. But for right now, let's see, Marshall's four, and Lewis obviously is 18 months, so that doesn't matter at all. But I'm like, I don't know when that'll start being uncomfortable. I guess when he gets to kindergarten, you know, you don't want your child to remember showering, your son to remember showering with his mother, you know, at like an older age.
Yeah.
But it's so convenient.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is really convenient. I mean, it was an assembly line, and that must have been past the age of five for me, because I remember the assembly line being in Chicago in our first bathtub. So it was three of us in a bathtub, and whoever was closest to the spout was the one who was being washed by my mom.
Uh-huh.
And then as you came out, you were dried by dad, you went, put your PJs on, came back, and then dad had the hair dryer.
Yeah.
So I was well past the age of five having bath time with my little brothers and older brother. One younger brother, one older brother. I have one younger sister, one older sister. So we definitely carried that out through kindergarten,
right,
first grade,
middle.
Second grade. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We definitely all bathed together.
And I'm kind of like, I think with the boys, like, whatever, they can shower with dad for, you know, my husband is, you know, it's like you go to the locker room when you're in middle school and everybody of the same sex is naked or whatever, but I'm just like, I guess if Marshall was a little girl, I bet Glenn probably wouldn't be comfortable showering with him. And now, you know, it's like we all just get in the shower together.
So, yeah, I feel the same way about the potty training. I just don't know what to do with that.
Oh gosh,
I'm really nervous about it.
He's two, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought I was going to be brave and started at, like, 2.5 right after my second was born, and we all ended up on the bathroom floor crying together one day. Like, Lewis is crying,
no.
Marshall's screaming, I'm laying on the floor, like, right next to him crying, and I'm just like, why am I doing this to myself? And it was winter, so I was like, I'm not even going to try. And so I think he was well over three. He was, like, probably 3 years and 2 months or something before we were regularly getting the hang of that.
Yeah, I need to read a book or something about it. I don't really know how to do it. My sister has a son who is 10 months older than Henry, and she said something one day a while ago when she started thinking about potty training her son, and she said, you know, I said, what are you doing? She's like, oh, well, I'm cleaning out underpants with poop in them. And I was like, you know what? I have been there for myself. I think I'm going to hold off a little bit on doing that for my kid.
Yeah, you do get to the point, too. Like, there were lots of underwear accidents. And I was like, I can't just, like, throw all this underwear away. This is adding up. Like, this is a lot of underwear.
Yes. I mean, I had the same experience when I had my disease, too. I was like, this is ridiculous. I can't be throwing away my Lululemon workout pants every 10 seconds because I need to run on the treadmill. Like, I'm going to need to figure something else out. And surgery ended up being the case for that. But
well, and your underpants are a lot more expensive than
indeed
the Mickey Mouse totally. Six-pack you buy at Target for your son.
Yes. Absolutely.
But good luck to that with that. I mean, that's, yeah, it's challenging. It's hard, but I don't know. I always heard the boys were harder, and so we'll never know. I don't know. You might know someday, but I don't think I'll ever know.
No, I don't know. I love being a mom to a boy. Like you said, you love being a mom to boys. I don't have that, like, really, I really only care about a healthy baby.
Right.
I just could not give a crap either way about a baby being a boy or a girl. We didn't know for Henry when he was born.
You didn't
find
out.
No,
that's,
and I just didn't care.
Right.
I was so happy to be healthy and have a healthy baby that it was just such a blissful experience.
Yeah, we found out with Marshall, and then we didn't find out with Lewis. And when he came out and I labored with him, I didn't have to have a C-section, and He had
he came out.
He had a, and I labored with say him. He had that meconium, and so he had like sucked some in a little bit, and so they had to like bring the NICU team in to like make sure he was okay. And I'm like, why isn't he crying? Why isn't he crying? And they're like, we don't want him to cry because we don't want him to get that in his lungs.
Yeah, I want him to aspirate it.
Yeah. So anyway, all I cared about was what was going on with that. And Glenn's like, by the way, it's a boy.
No.
like, I don't care what it is. Just make sure it's okay, you know? But yeah, then we found out with this one again, because I was like, you know what? We went the route where we didn't find out that time, and it was exciting and fun, and I wouldn't change it for the world, but I'm like, I kind of want to like emotionally prepare more than anything if this is a girl.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really scared of having a girl, actually. Terrifying. I'd be happy either way, really, truly, but, totally. Like, I feel like I would need, like, maybe a support group for moms of girls, because I don't know, I just, they're very different, and I'm not, I don't know if I'm equipped for that, so I'm very lucky that I have the most easygoing son in the
Do
world.
Do you really?
I mean, I heard your podcast with
Marianne.
Marianne was so fantastic, and I was like, yeah, no, Big Lou and Henry would be, like,
level two,
chill.
Level one.
Yeah. I mean, like, the chillest of chill. Like, Henry is active, but he is not at all, like, he doesn't throw tantrums. And, you know, some of that is, like, we ignore him every time he does that. Uh-huh. We have like, lots of discussions, but he's a very chill kid.
Right, like, you'd know if he wasn't, for sure. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, same. Like, Lewis is busy. I mean, he's 18 months. Of course he's busy. So it's a lot of work still, but, you can redirect real easily with him. Whereas with Marshall, that's really never been the case.
Yeah.
So, you know, she really like made me feel better about my, parenting decisions and just everything in general, because we would be at dinner and I would look at these other tables with these kids and I'm like, what am I doing wrong? Like, how are their kids just sitting there? Like, this is not normal. But, I mean, it's just because they had the Big Lou Henry-type kids, probably.
Yeah, and it's hard, you know? I mean, my parents would probably tell you about how different all five of us are. We all grew up with the same parents. We all grew up in the same house. We all, you know, for the most part, shared bedrooms. We all had the same opportunities. We went to the same school. Like, as similar as you could really get, you know, we share very similar DNA. So, you know, beats me how we're all personalities. We're all born with a little personality, you know, and everybody is a little bit different. And I think that in this day and age, there's so much sharing that goes on that sometimes you can feel like you're the outsider when in fact, you know, you're not seeing everyone's day-to-day life. Like, I'm the first one to say my kid is awesome, but you know, I also call him my little monster because when he gets crazy, he's crazy. He's a toddler. Like, he's bananas and he's big, and I pick him up by his legs and I put him in his crib and we have time out. And so, you know, you don't get to see all the day-to-day stuff. And I think, you know, when it always kind of like brought it back together when I was writing my blog and I was sharing all my stuff about my ulcerative colitis. I didn't want people to think I was this warrior. I wanted them to see what it looked like when I was sitting in the hospital and like eating pancakes for the first time. Like, I looked like total and complete shit.
Right.
And I felt like shit. And, you know, mommyhood is not all roses and beauty and moments of when your child is sleeping on you. Like, it's
right.
Like, mostly my kid sleeps on me when he's sick and he's snotting and he can't fall asleep. And then I don't get to sleep and it's a nightmare. And my poor patients who have to see me the next day, like, I feel bad for them. So I think that's hard. And I feel bad when moms like you say that kind of thing, because it is a snapshot.
It is, totally, for sure. And I try to be honest about the temper tantrums and the, hopefully it doesn't come off as complaining though, because sometimes I'll like say something on Twitter or whatever and I'm like, I hope people don't think I'm complaining, because, you know, I am so grateful that I'm, you know, could even have these kids. So
no, it doesn't come off to me as like that. It's like I kind of like reading everyone's little stories and stuff, and
yeah, totally,
you know, seeing what's going, it's, I don't know, it's kind of fun. It's, you know, like you've said on multiple occasions, like becoming a Twitter friend or a blog friend, like expands our group of support. And that's really, I think that's where social media really is the best, is thriving and it's at being at its best, is when it can bring a community of people together who may not otherwise be able to relate to those who they see in their everyday lives. You know,
it's,
I don't work
so
with
true.
People who have a lot of kids. I'm one of the few people in my office who have kids. So I don't have that environment. So I have, you know, extended group of friends or my mom friends or my Twitter friends, and it's great to be able to meet up when someone comes to New York and I'm like, "Hi, oh my God, we're so weird that we've never met before, but I know so much about you."
It's so true. And people that aren't active on social media do not get it, but it is so true. Like, you know, like Ashley, for instance, Fizzerati, like that's exactly how I feel with her. It's like you feel like you've been friends with this person for so long, you've been texting them and whatever, and you meet in person and you really are just normal friends.
Ashley's a really special person because she really is like, she's one of the most honest people I've ever met, but she's also really down to earth. And so she immediately, like, she was pregnant and she wanted to go for runs. And like, well, I would go for like little runs for her because she lived near the park. We meet up at lunchtime, she'd go for a run. And then I got pregnant. And so there we were like these two pregnant ladies running in the park together and sharing this experience. And I would not have met her if it weren't for social media.
Right. Isn't that nutty?
It's great. I think it's great. I think that's the good side of social
You
media.
know what's real weird though? I feel like a lot of the girls, like you and Ashley, I feel like a lot of my running friends on Twitter are East Coast, like New York. There's a lot of you guys, I feel like, compared
Yeah,
to, I don't know why.
we're very, I don't know,
The loud
maybe
group over there.
we're chatty. You know, like we're New Yorkers and Ashley's from New Jersey. It's like the tri-state area, we're just like loud and proud about it. So we also have a huge running community here. You know, you meet the New York Roadrunners, the New York Marathon really brings out the runner in just about everyone on the Eastern Seaboard. So you live on the Eastern Seaboard, and over the last probably 10 years, it's become a thing that, oh, have you run the New York City Marathon? And you know, when I first decided I was going to run the marathon when I was in college, I was like, it was not, I didn't know anybody who would run a marathon except my aunt, who was a runner, and her husband, and I used to run with them occasionally, and it was like a crazy thing that people did. And now it's this phenomenon, and everybody has a bucket list of I want to run a marathon, and that just blows my mind. But being in New York, you really get, and people travel into the New York Marathon too, so we get a lot of opportunity to meet people when they come in for the fall. When you have like a Wazelle meetup, you have a Lululemon meetup, you have a New Balance meetup, ASICS and Saucony, and you know, you have all of these different people coming in on this one weekend. But you know, we just also New Yorkers are we have a pretty active community here, which is maybe not as maybe it's not as well advertised that we have such an active group here, but we have like you see people from SoulCycle who are, you know, talking to a marathoner and they're like, "Yeah, I could do that. I do like survivor classes, which is like back-to-back classes, and then they get into running and then they do it, and then, you know, it's kind of an incredible thing." And I think also fundraising has brought a lot of people into that world too, and fundraising is big here in New York City. So you fundraise for Leukemia and Lymphoma, you fundraise for Team Challenge, you fundraise for various organizations, Fred's team and whatnot. And that will oftentimes propel people into the sport of running.
I think if I ever, so I've only been to New York City once. If I ever make my way back, I'm gonna have to, I feel like I'm just gonna like email all of you people and just be like, okay, this is what I'm doing on this day. Whoever can meet at this bar, I'm gonna be there and I wanna see everybody, you know,
Oh,
because you're
no.
all there.
No. This is how it happened, Lindsay. Instead of we're going to bar, we're gonna meet in Central Park. We'll meet at the Engineers Gate. Everyone knows where that is, and it'll be a run with Lindsay. It's like how Lauren Fleischerman and Jesse Thomas did this year. They were like, "Hey guys, we're gonna
This
meet
is
at
where
the
we are.
Engineers Gate, and we're just gonna go for a run, and then we will run to a bar."
To a bar, right? Because that needs to be included.
Run to a bar, or at least to a drunk brunch, which we call drunch.
I need to, well, this needs to be after the baby, after my baby, and then I need to start compiling my list of everybody I want to make sure I contact.
Oh yeah, I mean, these Twitter meetups that we have, they're no joke. I mean, you get like, you know, 20, 30 people who
I
show up
love
for a
it.
run.
That's so
Yeah,
fun.
it's pretty serious.
Okay, so we'll have to do another interview because or another episode with you because
Oh,
we're
I'm sorry.
No, I love it. It's so fun, and I had a feeling it would be like this. But there's more to talk about. But my Glenn, my husband, went to pick up the boys, and they're going to be home soon, so we have to wrap up. But let's talk about some fun stuff. What's the best book you've recently read?
So I've read a lot in science lately. So I've been being in school and stuff. So probably the most recent best book that I ever read was The Sports Gene. And it talks a lot about it's by David Epstein, who is a Sports Illustrated writer, but he's also like a runner and stuff. So he researched like what makes people great, what makes a great athlete, and it talks a lot about Olympic athletes who are, you know, they're not only good at cross-country skiing, but they're also good at rowing. And why is that? Why can they translate that? And is it adaptation? Is it genetics? And it's a great read for anybody who's interested in the science of the human body. And it's not like just a nerdy science book. It's like a really, it's really interesting
So,
book.
did you listen to the last week's episode with Laura Redmond?
Yes, I did.
So, like, she could be a part of that book because she's just such a gifted athlete. I mean, she works her ass off too, but like the things that she can do in two sports that are so completely different is crazy.
And you fi and they find that with so many athletes, like they actually seek these athletes out in different countries who are good at this, and they're like, "Yeah, but we have enough people for that, so we're going to put you in this sport." And they just excel because they're athletic. It's like Michael Jordan was a basketball player and he was a baseball player, and he wasn't the greatest baseball player, but he was still pretty good. And Bo Jackson played baseball and football, and he was good at both. Like, they're just these athletes who are just tremendous, and they're just tremendous athletes. And a lot of athletes have gone from one sport into like marathon running, like Apollo Ohno, and you know, he's no slouch when he's running a marathon, so.
Oh, that's interesting. So if you're not super sciencey, we'd still like it, maybe.
I think so. I think if you are interested, if you're a runner, and most runners at some point become interested in the sport of running, it's really interesting to find out, like, I'm more of an adaptation. Like, I'm not naturally gifted, but I adapt to training. So I see change over time with training. I'm not the kind of person who sees who just is like goes out and runs like a 6-minute mile. I can train into it though. I respond to training.
So, do you guys, if Henry goes to bed at 5:30 or 6, do you guys make time for any terrible TV watching or good TV watching?
We watch really good TV. I'm on a West Wing kick right now, but that's also partially because I'm a Hamilton kick right now.
Oh, you're one of those.
Oh my God, Lin-Manuel Miranda is like he loves West Wing, and it reminded me of how much I love West Wing, and it's just such great television. So when I'm just kicking around, I'm watching West Wing. But we really like the Sherlock series on the BBC. Is fantastic. And I know, you know what terrible television I still watch is Grey's Anatomy.
Do you?
Like, I don't find that it's so fun as it used to be, but I cannot stop myself from watching
Are they
it.
still making episodes?
They're making like full massive series. It's like series 13 or
Oh
something.
my
It's
gosh.
crazy. And you know, spoiler alert if anybody hasn't watched it, but like a lot of main characters are gone, or they moved away, or they were killed off. And like, you would think McDreamy is gone, they wouldn't do it anymore, but they're doing it. And you know, I just can't stop myself from watching it. It's like a train wreck. I want to see how it ends.
All the girls, all my girlfriends in college watched it. I mean, I feel like that's when it was really big, like 10 years
Yes.
ago. And
Yes.
I remember everybody would like lay on the floor in the living room and watch it, and I would walk in and be like, "Boo, you're watching Grey's Anatomy." And then I'd go back to my room and, you know, I don't know, get online or do something. But yeah, I never got into it.
You know what's nerdy about it now, though, is because I've worked in hospitals and I know a lot about different diseases and stuff. When they're talking about it now, if we ever watch reruns or whatever, I'm like, oh no, they have that, and they're gonna need this surgery, or like they're not gonna come back from that, or like one of the biggest episodes they have when the guy came up and shot up the hospital, and the patient that Mandy Moore played, she was in the middle of having my surgery.
Oh
She
my
had,
gosh.
yes. So like when I was listening to her, I was like, oh my God, she has a colostomy bag and or is going to have a colectomy or a J pouch takedown or something. She's got, that was her surgery. And so it was always, it's now it's like a puzzle. Can I figure it out before they say it? And you know, I get kind of nerdy about, well, that they would never do that. And by the way, ORs are really, really bright most of the time. They're not dark like that. And they're cold, man. Those places are cold,
They
cold
are cold.
places.
Yeah. My mom's a nurse. Well, she worked in the ER forever and now she works in post-op, but that's why she won't watch shows like that because she's just like, it's so unrealistic.
Yeah, it is. But it's like,
But it's fun.
it's so
Yeah.
fun. Whatever.
So if you could recommend one thing to listeners, like apparel, makeup, anything, what would it be?
Assuming listeners are like me and have trouble, I was thinking about this today, and as I was like going on today, what was my favorite thing to tell people about? I'm in love with this company called Lively. They
Okay.
make these amazing bras, and they're three for $75,
Oh, wow.
and they're super comfortable. And the adjustment part of the strap is the front, so you can adjust it in the front instead of having to take it off and like fix the strap if it's too long or too short. And they all become racer backs.
Ooh.
So they all have like a little clasp that becomes a racer back, and they're so comfortable. And I was like, you know what? These were a great find. And I don't get any money or kickback. I bought all my bras from them, but I love them.
How'd you
And
find
I.
them?
My girlfriend Jen, she was she does like a lot of different ambassadorship stuff because she has an incredible body and she's the director of a Pilates studio and stuff. She's very active on social media. She's beautiful, and they sent stuff to her to try. And she was and normally she doesn't really do that kind of thing, but she told me about it and I was like, really? And I put in for some and they came in this beautiful box and they're awesome and I love them and it's Lively, Lively.
I'm definitely going to have to look into that because I have three regular bras that aren't sports bras. I have a black, a gray, and a nude, which is fine. That's really all I need, but they are all from Target.
Yeah.
So they're nothing fancy. And
Well, these
not.
are soft. They're just
Yeah.
comfortable.
Yeah. Okay. So, oop, I just got a text from Glenn. He's going to be home in 7 minutes and it's going to be mass chaos.
That's so exact.
I know. I said, make sure you text me before you get here. Okay, rapid fire questions. This is a new thing I'm going to do. Tupac or Biggie?
Oh, no, Tupac.
Tupac, me too. Mariah or Christina?
Mariah.
Morning person or night person?
Morning.
Got that in the interview for sure. NSYNC or Backstreet Boys?
NSYNC.
I know you like both, but if you had to choose, Twitter or Instagram?
You know, I like pictures. I like Instagram.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Okay, I love it. Well, this has been so much fun. I feel like I've been talking to somebody that I've talked to a million times before.
Me too. This is how I really on Saturday mornings when I go for my run, I plug it in and I put on your podcast and I'm like listening to my friends chat as I'm running around the reservoir.
I love it so much. And you know, after, so I go through these interviews and I edit them, of course, and that takes a, that, you know, I'm sitting in front of my computer and listening back when I'm editing, is so completely different than, when I listen back later. And I always say this, I know it sounds narcissistic, but like I always listen back to the episode after the fact because there's so much you miss when you're actually having the conversation. Not that you're not listening, but you're like, you know, you're doing a conversation and then you edit and you're just like paying attention to the ums and ahs and all that good stuff. And so then when I listen back, I just love it. And I love being able to really hear what you and all the other guests get into. So.
Well, I don't think it's narcissistic just from my point of view, from having been an actor and working now as a professional. I work on other professionals. The only way that you get better is to self-analyze.
It's so
And
true.
especially when you're speaking, because the ums and the ahs and stuff, they are as much as you can, listen to how what your vernacular is and what your trip ups are and work on that. You will get better at being an interviewer. So I don't think it's narcissistic. I think it's smart. I think if you want to get better, you have to analyze yourself in some way. And when you're afraid to do that, I think that's being afraid of growth.
It's so true because I'll listen back and I'm like, why did I do that? Or why did I say that? And you know, it's so funny because getting into this podcast, I was just telling my husband about this before he left. I was like, you know, when I wanted to start this podcast, I envisioned it being like the conversation you and I just had, like an easy, natural flow conversation. And it doesn't always end up like that. And I never learned how to interview someone or, you know, carry on these kinds of conversations. So yeah, listening back is super important because then I learn how to do it better. So anyway, I really appreciate you coming on. This was so much fun.
That's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And I hope you get a little bit of Henry time before he has to go to bed.
Oh, I totally will. I'm going to go steal some baby kisses.
Okay. All right, Abby. Thanks so much.
Lindsay. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. That wraps up episode 22. Thank you so much, Abby, for coming on the show. As usual, guys, I release a brand new episode every single Friday, so make sure you're looking for that. Because I'm trying to think of what to say.
Don't drop my phone. Don't drop my phone. Please don't.
Thank you, everybody, for your support, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
You don't throw my phone.
Bye.